All right, we're going to go ahead and kick off the meeting. My name is Joe Davis, Tribal Chairman. Just want to welcome everybody here. Thank you for coming out. And, you know, we would just like to kind of remind everybody that, you know, there's good reasons why we're here today, right? And that's to identify issues, make improvements. You know, everybody should have a voice to share, you know, their ideas on how we can improve, you know. And so not only are we hoping to identify the areas that need improvement, but also be able to come up with solutions. And so encourage everybody to do just that. Please state your name when you come to the mic. We want to give everybody a chance to speak who wants to speak. So try to keep your comments to the point, and you know, maybe your comments within 5 minutes. If you go over your 5 minute timeline, we're going to ask you to let the next speaker go. We can always come back to you. So we have some really important areas to cover today. We're going to start with the enrollment presentation, and then we'll come back and I'll give my update on behalf of the council. And then we'll go into, we'll have a discussion on constitutional amendments before lunch. But I want to remind everyone, there's a survey out there. There are door prizes. So if you complete your survey, turn it in, you'll get a ticket. And it'll be well worth it. We need to hear from you guys on these things. So again, Darcy asking her for a prayer. So I'll do a quick prayer if you don't mind. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for our tribe. We thank you for all of our people, for all the ones that are here today and their families and those back home. And we thank you for our resources, our land, our waters, and our future. And we just pray that you bless all of that. Help us to do the right thing and help us to bring more peace and joy and strength and prosperity to our community and our family, to just be strong and do the best job we can. And Jesus' great name, amen. All right, Rhonda.
Is it on? Good morning, everybody. My name is Rhonda Begovich. I am the director for the Hoopa Tribal Enrollment Department. And so today we have a presentation for you, and what it's aimed to do is it's aimed to outline specific models that we can potentially look at. And so a majority of everything that we're going to present to you today is feedback that we have heard from the tribal membership. And so before we actually dig into the presentation, the one thing I want to mention is the only thing that we're firmly standing on is the enrollment eligibility criteria. And so everything that we're presenting today is spurred from feedback and comments that we've received from the tribal membership. And also, we have not gotten any legal advice at all from any of this stuff. So we're kind of dependent on getting feedback from the tribal membership today. And, you know, let's just go ahead and get into it. Okay, so the first slide. The first slide is just basically what we're presenting today. It's statistical data, enrollment criteria, and membership demographics. So we're going to be showing a lot of stats to you today to help you understand where we are with enrollment. Okay, so the blood quantum. So our current membership is 3,646. And so what this graph is going to show you is the makeup of quantum. And so you see over there, and I forgot my little doohickey where I was going to point and show you all as we're walking through it. But we have 1,563, one-eighth, and so clearly that's like the end of enrollment. And so you see the other portion of the pie, and those numbers right there indicate that we have enrollment underneath. That's how much we have, and so I meant to add that all up, and I didn't get a chance to, so. Thank you. I set it down. Okay, so this is the enrollment criteria, and this is where we're at today. So you must be a direct lineal descent, must meet the minimum requirement of 1/8 Hoopa Valley tribal blood specifically. must have an original birth certificate, and you must be able to prove maternal or paternal lineage, and that's through marriage licenses, DNA, and birth certificates. So direct lineal descent is something that we would recommend not to deviate away from, because this allows us to have precise enrollment procedures. If we deviated away from this, this would cause, we would have to change so much within our policies and procedures. But the good part about it is this allows us to trace lineage really easily, because it piggybacks up here where it's a lottee to child, to parent, to child, to applicant. So we don't lose any of that data. We keep on point with all of that. And then we also keep point of all of the blood quantum from there to there. So that's why it's important to keep direct lineal descent in place. Okay, next. Wait, not next. This, we're right here. So our blood quantum trajectory is based on age-bearing years. And so the reason why we're showing you this data is so that we get a firm number, like where we are with a next generation of enrollment. So 8/32 seconds is the last enrollment. Like if your blood quantum is 8/32 seconds, that means you're the last of having one more generation under you. And so 8/32 seconds is 25%, and then 1/8 is specifically 12.5, that's 1/8, there's no more enrollment under you. And so the reason why I wanted to show the membership, what the female does, this is childbearing. So you have 370 women that could potentially have, you know, another enrollment under them. So that is basically, you have 370 promised enrollments if that mother decides to have children. Oftentimes they don't want to have children. Sometimes they have more than one child. So, and the same with the men. So that's the reason why we put these numbers up right here, is so you can understand how many more enrollments we have guaranteed with this blood quantum. And those are the numbers that it looks like right there. Next. Okay. And so, again, this is more data just for better understanding of probability. And so this is based off of, these numbers right here are based off of 8/32 seconds. And so, again, we wanted to, for you to understand, like, the probabilities off-reservation men within childbearing years, which we've listed from, for men, 13 to 65. And for women, we've listed them from 13 to 40. These are the numbers right here. So the probability of a man possibly having children, they're easy, right? So 201. That's a guaranteed enrollment. 476 guaranteed enrollment off reservation, 165. So these guys all have the probability of. But the reason why I wanted to show you this was if we deviate from mating with another native or with the Hoopa tribal member, this is what we're looking at. So I know it kind of looks a little complex, but those numbers are still very important to look at, so that way we get a better understanding of, you know, how many more enrollments we have under us, and, you know, we're not as far away from, you know, disappearing as a tribe based off of this data. So this is the basic feedback that we've received from the tribal membership. The most controversial of it all probably is pre-63, because I don't think that people understand all that would go into that and how much that would change. So the one thing I want to mention even before we get into this list is there's going to be a consequence for any decision that we make. No matter what we do, there's going to be a consequence to that, and we have to just kind of be well informed before we make any decisions. And so a big part of the reason why we are actually presenting is because we often hear people wanting to carry petitions, and I feel like it's best to be to inform the tribal membership of all of this data, to understand where we are as a tribe, and then to kind of go through. We didn't get to research a lot of this. And again, you know, I didn't get a lot of legal feedback from this. This is just kind of what I see and what I've been able to research on my own. So pre-63, marshal all Indian blood. That seems to be a favored one from the tribal membership. I've heard that the tribal membership would like us to fix the pre-63 inadequacies. fix a Latisse to 4/4, which would make a huge difference in a lot of families' enrollment possibilities. Devise a descendant role, make all members 4/4, monitor European bloodlines, no quantum lineal descent, tiered enrollment status, lower the blood quantum to 1/16, disenrollment, or do nothing. Next. So I'm going to break this down a little bit more. Some of these I didn't get a chance to get as in-depth as I would have preferred, but I did go through a lot of this material. Okay, so marshalling all Indian blood, which is formerly known as pre-63. This is to include all Indian blood quantum, not just Hoopa tribal blood. Would this be limited? So this is kind of the questions that we can look at as we move forward. If this is a model that the tribal membership wants to move in, but would we limit it to California Indians, federally or state recognized tribes throughout the United States, Canada, or Alaska? Next. So this is where it gets complex, guys. And so this is exactly what the tribal membership wants, right? So we've listed this 1/8 right here as, you know, the possibility of like what our enrollment eligibility requirement right now is 1/8 Hoopa. And so 7/16 is what we could classify as. Maybe we'll go half here, half Yurok, half Karuk. And so ultimately the goal is to make that all one blood quantum, which would be 9/16. So the pro is, obviously, we would be able to bolster our enrollment. We go from 1/8 to 9/16. That's more than, you know, almost more than half. So that's favorable. And so next. The point about this is, okay, so hypothetically, we're going to say we keep this 1/8 Hoopa. Right, that's a part of our requirement. And then this is the extra blood that we've included from other tribes. And so the part that where we get kind of murky is because, you know, the ultimate goal is like to, you know, to count all of this Indian blood. That's what we want to do. However, if we leave the requirement of 1/8 still as Hoopa blood, you have to have 1/8. It kind of defeats the purpose if you say all of this Indian blood, we've calculated this, it's 9/16 now, but we still keep this eligibility. With the next enrollment, we're going to cut this in half, and it's still 1/16, and so it defeats the purpose. But if we include all of this other Indian blood, if this person lives off of the reservation, lives on another reservation, then, you know, their mindset is different than how we think as Hoopa people, and so we might as well, you know, that's... The problem with that is we take the voice of the Hoopa people away. And so that's been a concern that I've heard from some of my predecessors. They don't like the idea of marshalling all blood for that simple fact that the true Hoopa people will lose their voice because this 7/16 other Indian blood is, you know, perhaps could be a louder voice than the Hoopa people. Pre-63 inadequacies. And so we hear this quite a bit, and we didn't get to look and see how many families are actually there. And this is some research that we will actually start looking at. But due to the Jesse Short Settlement Act, a lot of full-blooded siblings didn't get the full count. And so full-blooded siblings who share the same biological parents were not recorded to have the same blood quantum total. And so, which is unfair because there's like maybe a 1-year difference in their birth and they share the same parents, but they didn't get the same blood quantum. And, you know, it just causes a lot of problems. And so that was one of the things that had been brought up at Augie's district meeting, and they wanted me to look at that as well. So this right here, obviously more research has to go into it just to see if there are legal parameters in place, because this has to do with the Jesse Short Settlement Act. And so I'm not sure that if there's going to be complications to that. And so that's why I've dubbed this legal obstacles versus sovereign nation. And so, you know, this kind of goes back to, you know, what we can do as a tribe. And so I put here, you know, father plus, mother plus, full blood quantum. And that's kind of what we're looking at. That's what the tribal membership said that they wanted. So we'll look more in depth to that if that's what the tribal membership would like us to do. So fix all allottees to 4/4. Make all allottees 4/4. Some are listed as 7/8, some or 5/16. And so what this does is clearly it takes this generation out of eligibility by 1-3%. And so, which is a shame because, you know, it's hard to tell people that they can't be enrolled because they're off by 1%. And so we've encountered that quite a bit. So it would be a favor to the tribe if we could convert that to, in my opinion, all of our allottees should have been 4/4. And I'm not sure why they weren't, but, you know, it goes back to speaking to my predecessors. It goes back to getting legal advice on, you know, how we navigate this proposition. But it is definitely something that we're looking at. It's something that myself and the enrollment committee have started to discuss. Lineal descent, this has two separate meanings. And so reclassifying the Hoopa tribe to lineal descent would require amendment changes in the policies and procedures. There are two terms for this. One, no blood quantum, which also, you know, a lot of people are in favor of, no blood quantum. The second is there's breaks in the enrollment. So up here you can see where it's a lot T, not enrolled, 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 not enrolled, enrolled applicant. And so we lose data as we go through this, and it makes it complicated because in my belief, we probably wouldn't ever truly navigate away from direct lineal descent because, like, we would probably require all of the same enrollment criteria, even if there was a break in there. So somehow we would still have to have birth certificates, marriage licenses, DNA. So it's just best to keep that in place. Lineal descent, no quantum. And so if the Hoopa tribe deviates away from blood quantum, it would be a benefit to the tribe to not consider quantification as a measure to determine eligibility or ineligibility. This disrupts the elimination plan devised by the federal government intended to erase our status on paper. And so unfortunately, that's kind of what quantum does, right? It, you know, eventually, unless we mitigate a solution. If kept, blood quantum is an evolved tool which helps to protect the integrity of tribal blood. And so it's unfortunate that, you know, we really actually depend on quantum, so that way we kind of protect the integrity of the blood of the tribe. If we take the quantum away, other strategy would be put in place. And so, you know, even though there's no quantum, I'm sure that we would have to develop something in place to make sure that, you know, we're just not, we have to be strict with our enrollment. I mean, I think that's one thing that we are firm about. And so when I say that it's an evolved tool, this is for all tribes, you know, and then including us, the Hoopa Valley tribe. So make all members 4/4. Make all active members, tribal members 4/4, essentially resetting the blood quantum degree to full-blooded Hoopa Indian. This was recommended by a tribal member. We didn't really get too in-depth with this concept because, in my opinion, this would be our last resort. You know, we would want to go through and we would want to look at pre-63, other ways to bolster our blood, to preserve our tribe, and then this would be the last shot that we would make. And then this also, you know, not only would be, if we decided to go that way, then we would be marshaling all blood. And so that means any other race, we would be bringing them in and we would be classifying that as Hoopa blood. And so resetting the genetic clock would guarantee enrollment for approximately 5 generations. And so that's a good thing that if we decided to go 4/4. And so if we decide to include more stipulations to this model, our original lineage would eventually be washed out. So if we move in that direction right now, you know, it goes back to the same thing that I was explaining before, where other tribes have a louder voice other races would have a louder voice within our tribe. So this one we kind of discussed it a little bit amongst myself and the enrollment committee. We didn't put too much into it, but this is a great idea. An ABC role. There would be an active enrolled membership, there would be a non-active membership, and then there would be a descendant role. And so the cool thing about being an active member, this means that you are heavily involved in your tribe. You go to meetings, you vote, you know, you keep your information active through fiscal, you keep your information active through enrollment. The B role would be where the group has limited eligibility to land resources. If they don't vote, then, you know, they potentially could be put into an inactive status. If they don't update their contact information over a period of time, they would be considered inactive. And then also, I think I intended to put up here that possibly if an adult enrolls later in life, then possibly we could say they would not receive any resources for approximately 2 years after their enrollment. The descendant role is, I think that we need to do a descendant role. The group who is acknowledged as a descendant of a tribe receives a descendant card but is not eligible for per capita, welfare stimulus, or land assignments. So we are open to discuss and discussion and feedback. All information provided is a response from tribal member discussion. The enrollment department and enrollment committee will continue to research any information our tribal members recommend. So I guess now, if we have any questions, does anybody have questions for me?
We also do have an agenda item. Go ahead, Kristen. If we do have an agenda item for more discussion on potential for constitutional amendments at 11 as well. I believe any changes to the blood quantum would be a constitutional amendment. So if you don't have anything now, we can always come back to that later. You'll have more opportunity. But I see Lois. Go ahead, Lois.
Are you wanting us to wait till later time? I mean, I can.
I'll leave it up to you. We got a few more minutes on this agenda item. So if you wanted to go now, that'd be okay, too.
My name is Lois Risling. I'm a member of the Hoopa tribe. I wanted to say I wanted to thank the enrollment department for providing this information because it does get one thinking. But my question is, Hoopa's original role is an ABC role already. There was the A schedule, the B schedule, and the C schedule. That's the basis of our political status. Every one of those guys sitting up there, they're here because of political status. That the tribe is a political entity. And so what it seemed to me is that the presentation confuses the political status idea with our cultural constructs and who we are as a Hoopa people, both by blood and genetics and both by culture, that those two things go together. And what it seemed to me is that the presentation was weaving those things together to come to a conclusion that I don't think represents necessarily the position of the Political Status Council or the membership that's here. We had an ABC role, and I'm not saying this to apologize for my age, but I'm on the A schedule. A means best, right? You get an A, that's the best. But other people were put on the B schedule. It had nothing to do with the Jesse Short case. That was our tribe making that decision. We made that decision. And the C role is even another. It gets brought into the Jesse Short case to provide evidence, but it is not the basis. That ABC role is the basis. Changing the blood quantum and making the allottees 4/4, you're going to have people who were allottees on the Hoopa roll who didn't have a drop of Hoopa blood in them. And they got allotments on this reservation and still have those allotments. And now we're going to say all those people, we need that magic wand back, because pre-63, we had a magic wand. My grandfather was a Karuk man. His blood in me, because I'm on the A schedule, turned to Hoopa blood and made me over a half Hoopa. Joe's cutting me off. We'll decide which Joe did it. We don't know. But anyway, we need to look at that. I think we need to consider political status. We, in our as a tribe, we have the authority to do, we talk about self-governance, we talk about being who we are. We have that authority to go to political status and say everybody who is a descendant of the original schedules that we had here in Hoopa would be a tribal member. I think being Hoopa is more than just enrollment in your tribe. I think we have some obligations as tribal members. We should have to participate in tribal governance. We should acknowledge and know what our cultural constructs are, and we should practice those. Those are the, and they're two different things. To limit ourselves to five generations, that's not enough. We have to be here forever, forever. And limiting ourselves to five generations is going to do it. We should go bite the bullet, go to descent. Status. We are strong. We keep saying that every time somebody runs for council, they say we are Hoopa people and we are strong. Well, let's do exert our political status. It is, we knew when we had the vote to reduce it to an eighth that that would only be a Band-Aid. There was only one person on our committee who said go to dissent back then when we put that change in, and that was Steve Waldie. And I'm his wife. I said, you don't know what you're talking about. That'll never happen. But it's time. It's kicking me in the butt now. We have to do it. But don't mix up for the enrollment committee political status from who we are culturally as a people. Because that's that part of it is Hoopas believe, and it's very hard to get it out of my brain, a little drop will do you. You got to have some Hoopa blood in you or you can't be. But you know, I'm proven wrong. Go back and look at the B schedule. Go back and look at the C schedule. There are people on there who were, and that's why we didn't get the decision we wanted in the Jesse Short case. Because of that, it's already there. We've already done it. Please, let's include all of our people and just go to political status descent. That's what the big tribes are doing, and the smaller tribes are having to face that now. Thank you.
Thank you, Lois. Definitely some things to think about there. So I'd like to give my update now on behalf of the council. As you all know, we have this special political status that our ancestors fought very hard for. And of course, a lot of people gave their lives for it, right? And people had to give their children for it. They went to boarding school, gave up language, moved out of the villages. They started taking 90% of our water, sending it down south, and they took probably at least, by my estimation and looking at the ancestral map, I would say probably two-thirds of our ancestral territory is not a part of the reservation. So we gave up a lot for this trust responsibility that the government has to provide to us today, which is the funding we get for healthcare or the funding we get for restoration of the Trinity River, all those compact line items you see in the BIA budget, and we know that it falls short. Probably about 2 or 3 years ago, when Deb Haaland was the Secretary of Interior, she put together, it was called the STAC, the Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee meeting. And they did a great job of really outlining all the areas where the government has fallen short of their trust responsibility. Now, personally, I would like to think if we cut our relationship off with the federal government today and didn't accept any more benefits, that we would be just fine, maybe even stronger, because we would have to rise up and do everything on our own. But aside from that, we do have to hold them to that trust responsibility that we fought so hard for. And so the council has been working hard on that. We've gone to Sacramento multiple times. We met with both the BIA and the Bureau of Reclamation. We've been back in D.C. Lobbying for funding for the Indian Health Service, and that's including with the Indian Health Service themselves, as well as up on the Hill. We met with several congressmen just last week, and we partnered with the California Rural Indian Health Board. We had Kamau board members there. We had Kamau executive staff there. Council members were there. And so it's been a good team effort. We continue to push on that. We signed a contract with Spirit Rock LLC. They're a type of a firm in D.C., kind of like a lobbying firm, but I don't think they're necessarily lobbyists. They're more of eyes and ears and getting us to the table with these leaders so we can push for our rights. So that's been a major focus of the tribe. It's our responsibility as a council to do that. It's not always easy. You know, I think when I first started on the council, it was like, man, you look forward to that. Shoot, we get to go to D.C. It's fun. But now it gets to be tough after a while. You know, you're away from your family for a week, and it's but we got to do it. And we've been doing a good job of being there, having that voice at the table. So that's been a major focus area for us. We've been working on that. We'll continue to work on that. I think Mike Orchid has some good updates he's going to share today on fishing rights. We're definitely making progress there. I give him and Danny and all the crew that works in that area a lot of credit. They've been really tenacious. And, you know, if one thing doesn't work, they shift gears and they go for another strategy. And some of the new strategies they have now seem to be gaining some real good ground with the Bureau of Reclamation as it relates to water and additional water for our tribe. Also want to talk a little bit about the youth. We did have a few meetings now to start a youth nonprofit organization. So the idea is to get that nonprofit number so we can go out and solicit donations from private foundations, from grant funds, from philanthropists. We know that there's something like $500 billion in charitable giving each year that happens in the United States. And less than 1% of that goes to tribal people. And so we're trying to access that. And so we're making some progress there to get that up and going. Got some meetings this week on that to move it forward. We've got plant management has been working on the old youth center. They're doing some construction there. We're hoping to get that reopened again. And we have the Boys and Girls Club back up and running again. So they'll have more space now over there working with Tribal TANF, who always supports our youth. We have been supplying firewood to elders. Come to find out, you know, people have slipped through the cracks. Maybe not everyone has gotten their wood, and that's unfortunate. The Tribal Elder Services, we're looking for a new manager right now. So hopefully once we get, you know, a new manager in there, if you know anybody to apply, we think that will go a long ways towards stabilizing their efforts and their work. But just this past week when the power went out and it was snow, you know, a lot of tribal resources came together and they got out and delivered a lot of wood just this last week. I think Merwin reported his crew delivered 14 in one day and 12 the next, loads of wood to elders and folks. So I was really happy to see that. J.W. Mooney was out delivering kerosene to elders who needed it. You know, our people will rally and come together and do a good job if we're just making it a focus and an effort. And I think we'll hopefully continue to improve in that area. We've also been working with Klamath Trinity Joint Unified School District. We've talked a lot in the last several years about getting more tribal influence into our schools, more curriculum around natural resources, healthcare, all those fields of employment that we need our people to be strong in going forward. You know, we know that at Kamau or the school district in particular, there's a lot of turnover. We don't get enough local people that are stable in those positions. We're having to bring in outsiders who don't stay, and it's really not a benefit to the organizations. And we know that some of our own work that we do, whether that be some of our loggers, our burn bosses, you know, we have people within the tribe that have a lot of knowledge, and they're getting close to retirement, yet we haven't really developed the future. And so trying to get that going better as well. We've had a couple follow-up meetings. I know our education director has recently met with the interim principal at Hoopa High. Chance Carpenter and I have met with the vice principal. The council's met with the school district a number of times. So now I think it's just a matter of getting that curriculum together so that we have the teaching that needs to happen, and they're going to make space for us, we believe, for classes. I think it's either 2 hours a day, but we're going to try to rotate different tribal departments through there so that we get our kids excited in different career opportunities, career pathways, and fields. We've also been working, there's been a push from the council to get more people background checked. One of the things this will do will open up more internship opportunities so we can get more of our students either through TANF or even the Blue Lake Rancheria has offered through a grant that they have to pay for young people to work in our departments and learn new skills, learn career pathways, get them interested, get them excited. So that's been another area I'm thankful to see that the council has focused on. MMIP, Missing and Murdered Indigenous People, that continues to be a heavy burden of our tribe. Every time we have a MMIP meeting, you know, you see, you know, so many of our families, sometimes we don't realize the families that are still affected by that have loved ones that are missing and murdered. On top of that, we need to do more to prevent those things from happening by having positive activities. So we've been in Sacramento. The Yurok tribe hosted a really good meeting down there at the Hard Rock. And, you know, we were able to give some testimony, learn about resources that are out there. We've been sending people to meetings with other tribes, having meetings here. I know Rhonda's still working on a few things. Education got a grant for more activities, prevention activities. And so we're going to continue to try to create more resources, programs, activities around missing and murdered, the crisis that is missing and murdered Indigenous people. IHS funding negotiations is another important topic. You know, prior to me coming back into office, there had been a lot of progress made on the IHS negotiations. I think the tribe's position with IHS is that they need to fund us holistically. You know, that's everything from water and sanitation, which they've fallen short on, but also indirect to support the administrative functions of the tribe, because if the government is not funded to where we can have a healthy economy and work to provide more jobs for our people, work to keep the natural resources strong, working on our fishery, all those things that will lead to better health for our people. You know, health is really related to not just our physical ailments, but the job opportunities that are out there. If there's not enough job opportunities, if there's not enough healthy eating opportunities that go on, all those things that we work on, our people just aren't going to be healthy. They're going to continue to be in poverty. Anywhere you have poverty, you have addiction, you have crime. These are all things that affect our health. And so we continue to push and urge the federal government to fund us holistically so that we're covering a multitude of different areas. And so the Kamau Medical Center, I believe their board has recently approved or very close to approving a new annual funding agreement, AFA. And it really ties a lot of those well-rounded wellness activities into that. So I think that's good progress. I'm expecting that the council will adopt that within the next month or so. And again, I think there's been a lot of good hard-fought efforts on behalf of council members, Kamau board members, to improve our funding opportunities through IHS. And again, that's something the government promised when, you know, we gave up so many of our resources in the 1800s. Forest planning and timber sale preparations, that's another big one. Clarence Hostler Jr., better known as Bubba Doo, our forest manager, he's going to give a presentation today. We do have bids out for this upcoming year's timber sale. I think there's about 8 million board feet on the table for bids to continue to sell timber products. We're always trying to find ways to keep that going, keep that sustainable. And I'll probably defer to Clarence to give more detail on that as he'll present later on today. But, you know, we're always trying to improve efficiency, keep the sale prices high. It is how we keep our elder payments going, keep the trust fund going. Every year we've averaged anywhere from, I would say, $800,000 to $1.2 million in stumpage fees to keep those elder payments going, keep jobs here. So that is an ongoing effort. We're meeting all the time. We're looking at maybe new equipment, different things that will help make our forestry operation better. I mean, there's a lot tied to it. It's not just the sale of timber, but forest health as well. And we're talking about improving the acorn stands, healthier forests, fire resiliency, jobs. It all ties in. So that's another area that we have to spend significant time on. Again, I mentioned tribal fisheries. Mike will share more about that later today. There's always, I mean, it has a lot to do with who we are as a people, right? To have a fishery continued and healthy, clean water. More and more we see the federal government is always trying to get more share of the water or figure out ways to skirt around the laws that protect the Hoopoe Valley tribe. And so if we're not there in Sacramento, in D.C., providing documentation, which tribal fisheries done a great job of, you know, our fishery is always a target for others. So there's a lot of work that continues to happen around that. Elevation of the selection of bids for the facilitation of a long-range strategic plan. And this is something that really was tribal member-driven. I've heard it over and over since I've been on the council is we need a long-range strategic plan. You know, we know that our seats here on the council, they turn over, right? I mean, we get new council members all the time. And so that creates an issue where the tribe will start to go in one direction, and then you have new council members come in, and then we start to go in a different direction. And so what we want is a long-range plan that comes from the membership to where the goals remain the same of the Hoopoe people. You know, we can make small changes over time as conditions change, but we got to have a solid direction that we want a vision of the people that we're trying to get to so that, you know, the things that I'm working on don't just fall by the wayside when the next chairman comes in. You know, we got to keep the momentum going in a solid direction. And so by having that long-range strategic plan, and hopefully it's driven, again, by the membership, so there's commitment to making these things happen, we can get more continuity and stability for our government. Everyone's on the same page as to what the goals are, what the timelines are, who's going to be responsible for certain aspects. So we did approve Sacred Eagle Consulting tribal member-owned business. At the last meeting, we're going to go with them to do the long-range plan. Walter Gray put together a team of some pretty high-qualified individuals. One used to manage the North Coast Small Business Development Center. Another one's done a lot of work with the County of Humboldt, the City of Eureka. So they're going to be teaming up to complete this plan within 1 year. You should see community meetings coming out of that. You should see surveys. Be sure to participate because you guys see a lot of stuff that we don't see, right? And so have your input heard. We need to have a good plan going forward. And it can only be that way if the membership's on board. If you guys aren't on board, you don't feel like you're a part of it, I don't think it's going to go very far. So pay attention to that whole aspect. Financial services is another one. Unfortunately, with our tribal enterprises in particular, our accounting just hasn't been very good. You know, we have different entities that have different accounting systems. So right now, Tribal Roads Department, they work on out of QuickBooks. Hoopa Development Fund and the casino work out of the old MOM system, and HFI has a different system altogether. And they really don't jive with what the tribal fiscal has. And so we're not getting timely, accurate financial reports. And if we don't have that, it makes it difficult to make decisions. And so right now we have two different bids to bring in folks that can help us get our accounting up to speed. And hopefully by the next council meeting, we'll have a contractor selected that will not only implement a new financial system, but also work side by side with our managers to make sure they understand how to use the system, that they understand procedures, and really getting our financials up to speed. I am happy that Joel Schultz, our DeNoto CEO, has been working closely with Merwin Clark, who's our interim roads director. And in January, they netted a profit of $109,000. So that was a great month. February, I think they had to spend $40,000 on some new equipment or repairs. So we lost $1,000. But at least we're getting to a point of knowing where we're at so we can make decisions. Implementation of new operating procedures for Hoopa Shopping Center. So they're developing standard operating procedures as it relates to receiving inventory and comparing that with sales. So we know that if you bought 100 bags of rice and you sold 40 bags of rice, you should still have 60 on the shelf. But if you don't have 60 on the shelf, we know that, you know, somewhere along the line there was theft, there was maybe something got into it, maybe some of it went bad. But being able to track that, we think will go a long ways towards a more efficient grocery store, hopefully trying to work the prices down. So we are working with a company on that as well. These are things that will pay off in the long term. The goal, you know, there's a cost to it now, but if we get these procedures in place over the next 10, 20 years, hopefully it'll pay off for our grocery store because it has to be aligned with the best practices of all grocery stores everywhere and what they're doing. We should be keeping up. Evaluation of new development projects. Councilman Marshall here has agreed to kind of spearhead looking at a new tribal gas station. We also have the survey in front of you that we're asking to people to consider a fee on. It goes to tobacco, alcohol, sugary, unhealthy drinks, and potentially a 1%, which is about a 5 cent per gallon fee on gasoline, which over the course of 30 years would give us probably at least $4 million. So if we're able to approve something like that, we would take that $4 million revenue and probably get a loan to develop a new wellness center and or family fun center. You know, if you've ever been down to Bear River where they have their bowling alley and arcade and place where people can go to have a pizza party for their kids. Every time I've gone there for a family member, I always see a bunch of other families from Hoopah there. It is sad that we don't really have a place here in our valley to even have a good birthday party for a kid, let alone other family get-togethers. So that's the goal, is to develop something like that. I know Councilman Marshall, he's more on the wellness side. He's proposing a wellness center, kind of like, place with more room for exercise equipment, all those types of things that make us well. And really, we would ask the council, the membership and the council to give input to those areas. But we want to continue this progress of development. We see Kamau's building new housing. Linnea's got all her internet projects, broadband. Housing Authority continues to build homes. We got a new education center coming up. So this will just be another aspect to that of community development and wellness, and we think that our membership deserves it. Of course, there's always room for grants to help supplement these costs, but in the absence of grants, you know, we can't always depend on the ICDBG grant anymore. You know, housing's going for it, but it's been a while. We haven't been able to get that as much. It's tougher when you're a larger tribe, and I believe it was that grant that built this facility. But that was back in 1970s, so it's been a while. We need to come up with revenue to support the community. Development of programming to get more Class A drivers to operate tribal heavy equipment. So we've seen the Yurok tribe pass us up on the Trinity River restoration work. Tribal roads and HFI, they run short of operators for heavy equipment. And so we've identified funding. There's a flyer out. I believe it's on the tribe's social media. If you know people that are interested in going to Class A driver school, let them know. You know, that these are well-paid careers. We need more Class A drivers. And so we're looking to send, I would say, at least 5, maybe 10, to get people into those schools so we have a strong workforce. We can get more work done. It's good jobs. A lot of the people that have those skills are getting close to retirement as well. So that's been a focus for this council. Also, the efforts to reorganize the tribal administrative structure. It's currently in the LPA. You may have it there in front of you. I don't know if there's a PowerPoint around that. But that's something that was also asked of me by several tribal members over the years, and I believe some council members understand the need for it. So right now, our organizational structure is kind of inefficient. You know, you have the tribal chairman, whoever that may be at any time, overseeing 50 different departments at once. So what we'd like to see is maybe 4 separate divisions of the tribe, where you have oversight. Somebody is overseeing, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 departments, as opposed to one person overseeing 50 departments. And this would give more focus to different areas. It would allow for your management oversight to not be spread too thin. Of course, the chairman and the tribal council, working with the executive director, will continue to oversee, you know, these divisions within the tribe, but we're hoping it'll make us more efficient, because obviously what the structure that we have hasn't been working as well as we would like to see it, right? I mean, if things aren't working, we can't continue to do the same thing over and over. We have to make changes. So that's the goal. People always say they want to see change. So we have to make changes. It's in the LPA. It has not received the final approval. We have 2 LPA hearings coming up to get input from the membership. There definitely need to be changes made to that. We've already identified some things. Some tribal managers have given me some good input on things. So there will be changes to it as it goes along. I'm hoping we do approve it at the end of the LPA process. Okay. It was the, I know it was a 45-day target. I think we're looking at perhaps the first meeting in April. So it'd be around April 4th. So, well, we've identified some of them, yes, some no. One of them, the administrative team would continue to be overseen by the tribal chairman. The HUPA services division would be overseen by the executive director, which we feel, you know, is already in place. The natural resources division ideally would be overseen by an existing natural resources director. They would just be kind of elevated a little bit. And then the other one, the economic development division, you know, my vision for that, I personally would like to see the DeNoto Corp oversee that, but that hasn't been decided yet. It could be a new CEO that's brought in. So nobody's really in place for sure now, but that's kind of the vision right now that I'm hoping for. But again, we want input on it. The LPA will help. Of course, even if it comes to a final approval, you know, that'll be just a big meeting in itself where people can continue to give input, written input as part of the LPA process. Those are all options. Also, we do have, at the last council meeting this past Thursday night, there's the proposed cannabis regulations. That's something that's been out there for a long time. In 2018, it was victorious by a slim margin that the former cannabis regulations, which was basically a no tolerance, zero tolerance for cannabis, Title 34, was repealed. Ever since then, we haven't had any regulations around that. So the goal is to have regulations. The item was tabled at the last council meeting this past Thursday. We're going to have a working meeting on it, I believe, this coming Thursday or this week. So then the goal is also it'll be on the next council agenda. So even if it's approved for LPA, we'll still have LPA hearings. And then the final approval would come at a later time. But, you know, I encourage you all to take the time to read the document. I think probably Amber can provide everybody with a copy of it. So that'll be coming up. And the LPA hearing for the reorganization plan, the first hearing is March 3rd. The second hearing is the 31st of March. So we have two LPA hearings scheduled on that one. We've also been working closely with law enforcement. Starts with our own tribal police, but also the Humboldt County Sheriff. Drug activity, drug sales continues to be an issue. We did have one drug bust, but there's still people out there poisoning our people, and we want to address it. So we've had meetings recently with the Bureau of Indian Affairs special agent in charge. He set us up with a meeting with some of his drug folks. We've looped in the FBI on our letters of request to the sheriffs and the Humboldt sheriff and our Hoopaw Tribal Police Chief. We wrote a formal letter saying we want to ramp up drug enforcement, and so we continue to push for that. Sometimes it's slow. This council took a major stand on Thursday night and voted to remove the home and the land from a tribal member who was hosting over 1.5 pounds of fentanyl in their house and a number of high-powered guns, cash, thousands of dollars in cash. And so it's not easy to take those steps. You know, the housing board, they get paid $68 a meeting. And I'll be honest, I mean, they have fear. They don't want to you know, take somebody's house and land away and risk being retaliated against for that $68. And so I appreciate that the council stood up and made the motion, you know, and did what was right. So, You know, we don't want to have to take a tribal member's home and their land away. But sometimes in the best interest of the majority, we have to make those tough decisions. So, you know, it's not lost on us the importance of tribal member health and safety. It continues to go on for this council.